Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
And were you ever previously determined to be incompetent at any point?
Not to my understanding. So my understanding was that the judge did the same thing that you did, in abundance of caution. Let's go ahead and put her in and see. And I came out competent.
Well, when you say you came out competent, was there a period of time where you were ruled as incompetent?
Hello, Hidden Gems. It is Lauren, Dr. John. I always say that at the beginning as if all of you are Hidden Gems don't know. But for those of you that are watching and you're new to our channel, I am Lauren, and this is my counterpart, Dr. John, my co-host, Dr. John Mathias. He is a clinical and forensic psychologist. I am, or was, a TV reporter, and we are now the host of Hidden True Crime, which delves into the psychological motives behind unimaginable crimes. We just got back from, or I just got back from Delphi, Indiana, and we are wanting to catch up on so many important updates on other cases that we cover, particularly the Lori Vallow case. For those that thought the Lori Vallow case was over or is over, you are wrong. That's all I can say. Wrong.
Right.
It is not over. And not only that, in Arizona, where she is preparing for a trial, because justice for Charles Vallow has not yet happened, or for Brandon Boudreau, her former nephew-in-law, and her husband is Charles Vallow. Charles Vallow was murdered, and Brandon Boudreau, they say it was an attempted murder. She's been charged with both of those crimes. So we are awaiting her trial in Arizona. In fact, John, maybe you can share a little bit about this. This, you know, major, there's been so much news. First, I said, why don't you say this? And then I'm like, wait, hold on, I have more to say. First, she didn't show up to some court hearings, which is shocking and so disrespectful, in my opinion. We'll ask Dr. John about it. That's why we're going to talk about this and get caught up. And then now, cameras have been allowed in the Arizona courtroom too, something that did not happen in Idaho when she was tried and found guilty of murdering her two children, Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow. But now she wants to represent herself. And most recently, she spoke in court let's talk about that, because it's, is she competent? Is she not competent? Does it matter whether or not we should find her competent? There's been a lot of news about this, but Dr. John is going to have some new takes. So tell us really quickly, John, what's going on in Arizona, in Maricopa County, with Lori Vallow as she prepares? She has a new attorney too, or counsel.
Well, let's start with why we're picking this up again. I think that, of course, we've been on Daybell from the very beginning. That was our first case. So we have a tremendous investment in the outcome of all the Daybell cases. But I think I should mention that, you know, getting justice for Charles Vallow is really important, and we don't want him to be overlooked. And the families that knew and loved Charles, the victim's families, because Charles was obviously a victim. And in many ways, Charles was the beginning of the entire case. That Charles's murder is what set in motion all the other events that followed. So in some ways, if there had been accountability with Charles, or if somehow when Charles was on that now well-known body cam footage looking for help, if somehow there had been an intervention, then we wouldn't be covering any of this, right? So I think getting justice for Charles is very important to us. I think it's important to a lot of the families. And Charles, by all accounts, was a really amazing guy. He was extremely well liked. He was very generous. Like, Charles just seemed like a really good guy. I mean, we obviously didn't know Charles, but we've certainly talked to the families and heard stories. And so I think that's really important to reiterate, is that, you know, we're invested in getting justice for all the victims in the Daybell cases. And Charles is clearly one of those victims, and an important one, because in many ways, if somehow law enforcement or certain people had intervened earlier enough, then none of this would have occurred.
If they had listened to him, I'll say it, if they had listened to him and heard him and took what he was saying seriously, we could have saved many lives.
Or even if after the horrendous ambush murder of Charles, if Alex Cox had been arrested.
Just held overnight.
Treated as a suspect in a murder and not as someone who just happened to be that impulsively killed someone apparently and was doing it to defend himself, which obviously the evidence at the crime scene did not show that at all. So, but if that had occurred, then again, we would have, you know, a lot of this would have been prevented.
We know, as you pointed out, the family. We know Charles's sister well. We know that Colby Ryan, Lori Vallow's son, considered Charles Vallow a father figure in his life. We know that he was a good father and a good man. And you're right, Charles Vallow matters. And so this is not yet over. And the shenanigans, that's what I call them. And I think that's a nice word that is happening in Arizona. Yeah, needs to be talked about. She was found incompetent in Idaho for 10 months, found competent to stand trial. Now she's in Arizona, and it's like deja vu a little bit, or it feels like it, although representing herself in cameras are a whole new thing, or wanting to represent herself. And now she has new counsel. I mean, it's some pretty wild stuff going on in Arizona. So if you can help us make sense of it, John.
Well, she's gone through, I've lost track, but she's gone through many lawyers already. And she's gotten to the point where she wants to represent herself. So she wants to be pro se or pro per in Arizona. The attorney's calling it pro per. It's the same thing. It means for oneself, essentially represent oneself. I mean, let's back up a little bit. I mean, it's fascinating. So the first thing I would say about what's going on in Arizona with Lori Daybell is, for people who follow the Daybell trial, it's a really fascinating look at criminal psychology, the psyche of a convicted murderer and how she thinks, how she, you know, comports herself, right? How she acts, how she behaves in court, right? It's to me, you know, that's our interest, right? She's showing us now in real time. I mean, in some ways it's a horror show, because if she represents herself, I don't know, you know, I've never seen anything like it. A convicted murderer who is trying to fight charges against her, who wants to represent herself and put herself on display for the world to see. It's just amazing. Like, the first question you have to ask, or I want to ask, is why is she doing this, right? Like, that you would think that someone who's serving multiple life sentences would come to some agreement with the state about a plea deal. Just throw a couple more life sentences on, right? I mean, it's possible, and I don't know if the state's negotiated with her. It's possible the state, because of some of their mistakes early on, maybe the state isn't willing to negotiate with her, but I don't think that's true. I think that given a preference, I think in most cases, states are going to negotiate with people because it saves time and money, right? Most states don't have the resources to engage in long trials with murderers, especially murderers that have already been convicted. And so I think I think the first question you have to ask is, why is this happening? Right? Like, you, I would, if I were in her shoes, my guess is I would just try to get a deal and not, you know, just go away. But not, right. not here. Right? So the most obvious answer, when I think about that, the most obvious answer is, this is very attention seeking. This is someone who clearly wants to be in the limelight. This is someone who wants to stand out. It's almost as if all the attention and all the focus on her for all those years was taken away. And now she wants to get it back, right? She does not want to go into, she does not want to go gently into the night. She wants to make a statement.
Right.
And that's what she's doing. You know, I can't think of, if you want to make like a statement about how significant or important you are or whatever she's trying to do, representing yourself in a murder trial is got to be one of the most, you know, salient ways, prominent ways of doing that. And so for me, I that's my first question is, why is she even doing this? Why is she, why is she creating this spectacle? And so, you know, I think the answer has to be given what we know about Lori, and given that, you know, we know that there have been evaluators who have diagnosed her with personality disorders. It's not clear which personality disorder exactly, but let's say one or more personality disorders. I guess it depends on who you ask, but according to the courts, she has some type of personality disorder, which would, you know, be consistent with someone who, instead of just taking a deal and walking away from the limelight, that would be consistent with someone who really wants attention, and they really want to, I don't know if this is like her last stand, if this is like her chance. Maybe she sees this as an attempt to really plead her case. You know, we know, I just saw Colby. Colby jumped on. Colby did, you know, talk to his mom in jail in Arizona. And we got a glimpse into her perception of what happened. And she believes that Tylee committed the crimes, essentially. I mean, not, that wouldn't be true with Charles, but you can see this is someone who's, you know, this is someone who's not really attuned to reality too well, right? And so, you know, there's something really unsettling about this too. Like, it's like watching a train wreck. You know, like, it's not pleasant to watch this. You know, you're watching her, like, she's already a convicted murderer, but you're watching her self-destruct in real time. Right. And so, I mean, I don't know how Colby feels about that, but man, it's, on the one hand, you know, we want justice for Charles, but on the other hand, this is not pretty to watch, and it's not going to be pretty. But I guess from my perspective as someone in the forensic world, I think if you want to see kind of a disordered mind, a criminal mind in real time, you're seeing it. You're going to see it here.
Go ahead.
In that sense, it's, for me, I mean, I don't mean to be cold about this, but it's a little bit of a case study in criminal psychology, right? Like, you know, you're going to really, you're going to dig below the surface a little more with Lori and kind of see what's there and see what's, how she thinks and how she's acting, right? I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. Sad. It's sad.
Colby, who, for those new to this case, is the only surviving child of Lori Vallow. He's here with us tonight. He has his own YouTube channel that you can follow and subscribe to. Colby, thank you for being here. I want to let you know, Colby, that Colby went live last night talking about how frustrating it is to hear some of the media surrounding his family's tragedy And we went on a date night last night, Colby, the first time in months, by the way. That's not like a regular occurrence here. These are our date nights when we go live here together from separate rooms of our house. But we listen to you, Colby. We listen to your whole life, and you're doing exceptional work, and we're proud of you and your new addition to your family. And thank you for being here. Even though we're talking about hard things, we really admire you. And if you have any questions, share that, and I'll make sure that mods star them or I don't miss them so that we can answer any. And Colby actually has a great interview with John over on his channel as well that you can check out. So thank you, Colby, for being here. Well, what I want to ask you, John, too, is you say there's going to be spectacle, there's going to be a show, this is someone that's not well. Is she incompetent? And maybe you can't answer that. But, and also, by the way, I do have a clip from East Idaho News and Nate Eaton that we can show from this hearing at whatever point you want to. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, this case really turns things upside down in the sense that, you know, that Lori's attorney argues essentially that she's competent and she should represent herself. And one of the things her attorney says is, so Rule 11 in Arizona is has to do with competency hearings. And it's, you know, trying to determine competency. And her attorney points out that usually it's rare that the state will fight to keep someone, you know, to deem someone incompetent, that usually it's the defense that will seek to, you know, have a defendant be incompetent. And here you have Lori essentially saying, I'm competent, I can represent myself. And the state is objecting to that and saying, no, we need to put her under Rule 11 and really make a ruling on competency. And that, like, so you're reversing the normal process because it's typically the complete opposite. And her attorney argues that. And so, like, there's so many things going on here that are atypical in terms of the way this process works and the way that defendants are represented. And I mean, I'm just scratching the surface. So, but that in and of itself, like this idea of the state trying to retain her under Rule 11 and the state being concerned about her competency and the defense arguing that she's competent is so unusual. You know, that, I mean, like that in and of itself tells you that this is bizarre and this is going to be a different situation. And I mean, and that doesn't even begin to address this issue of delusional disorder, which we know that was one of her diagnoses, according to Judge Boyce, that she was diagnosed with delusional disorder. And so, you know, one big question here is, can someone with delusional disorder represent themselves accurately and fairly, right? And that's putting aside the idea of competence. So competence typically, not always, but competence typically usually has to do more with psychosis or schizophrenia or just, you know, a detachment from reality, hallucinations, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little trickier when it comes to delusions, but this situation is going to raise a lot of forensic issues that are really peculiar.
One thing I find interesting, and of course we can watch this together. This was last week, or was it last week? Yeah. Well, I guess it was about 10 days ago. And her original attorneys wanted her to have another competency test. She now has new counsel who seem to be supporting her desire to represent herself, which is fascinating. And that they seem to be fighting that she doesn't need a competency test. I mean,
well, their argument is it. So there have been forensic evaluators who have examined her, and they've said, some of them have said that she's competent. And however, part of the issue was that that determination was not based upon a face-to-face or what I refer to as a contact visit, that the determination was made from records of her. In jails and prisons, typically guards or mental health people, it depends on the scenario, but people typically have to take notes about their visits and how people are doing, right? There's going to be logs about people's functioning in jail or prison, and there's going to be records kept. You know, I don't know if she's in mental health treatment, probably not, but the determination was based upon records and it wasn't based upon an actual contact visit. So that's an issue, right? The state noted that she was incompetent. She was declared incompetent in Idaho in a previous case for 10 months, as you point out, and then she was restored to competence, and then she stood trial when she was competent. And so their concern, I think, is the state's concern. Obviously, their biggest concern is that somehow this could result in a mistrial, or they could get overturned on appeal, right? They're just trying to check all their boxes and make sure that if she represents herself, that there's fairly good reasons for doing so, and that this whole thing isn't going to be upended or overturned at some point because of issues around competency, or maybe even, you know, I haven't heard anything here about like insanity pleas I don't think, obviously, if she represents herself, she's clearly not going to go down that path, but something like that might be more of an option if she had attorneys representing her, but I don't know. It's really fascinating because you've got all these forensic issues in play that you don't typically see in a lot of cases, and they're playing out in a really strange way.
Yes. Should we, sorry, hold on. I apologize, everyone. You couldn't hear that, but I got a call on the screen and now my flashlight's on. Everything's going wrong here. Okay. Should we listen to of the hearing? I have it pulled up.
Sure.
Okay. And just let me know when you want to stop or say something about this. This hearing, her defense attorney, here we are. One thing I noticed is her defense attorney, who is new counsel, does seem to be a little bit nervous, in my opinion. And you said the same thing. I was like, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one that thought that. When making savings decisions, I want to know where my money is going. Acorns allows me to have that clarity. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, and your retirement. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. If you've ever wanted to start an IRA, Acorns has got you covered to get a good start. Open an Acorns Later IRA now and get up to a 3% match on new contributions. Who doesn't love extra retirement money? Something I love about Acorns is they allow you to see projected growth on their website. Simply go online, type in how much money you'd put in, and see the potential future balance of your account. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime. This Christmas, you can give the gift that brings a lasting impact by giving someone a lifetime membership to Rosetta Stone. With 25 different languages, all 50% off for a lifetime membership and no shipping fees, you can give your family and friends the gift that keeps on giving. For 30 years, Rosetta Stone has been the trusted expert with millions of users. Users of Rosetta Stone can conveniently get bite-sized language lessons from wherever they are using their phone or computer. Do not put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. And today, Hidden True Crime listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Does anyone wish that healthy eating was just easier? Like, I don't even want to think about it, but this is why I started using meal kits from Sunbasket. The kits are delivered straight to my door with all of the ingredients and easy to follow recipes. I can choose my own meals, but I actually let Sunbasket create my family menu for me. Again, I don't even want to think about this. They know my dietary requests, carb conscious and dairy free, plus my requests for less than 20 minutes of prep time. On the menu this week, pork lettuce cups, sweet potato chili, and shepherd's pie. The meats are antibiotic-free, the produce from hand-picked farms. Sunbasket also offers pre-made meals with zero prep or mess. They make a dinner faster than takeout and much healthier. Go to sunbasket.com/hiddentruecrime today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/hiddentruecrime to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order.
Lots of attorneys in our office. We spoke with our attorney who's in Rule 11 regularly. It's very rare that a doctor attempts to go back out to speak with a client a second time. Normally, I would never advise a client to not speak in Rule 11. However, we are defense attorneys. That is Rule 101. Your client shouldn't talk. And in this particular circumstance, we are saying we don't think she needs to be in Rule 11. So I don't think waiting around for Dr. Hernandez is going to get us anywhere. And we certainly don't need it to meet all of the evidence that is required in the count. And I think one other, the last thing is we don't see this with the state. How often do we see the state trying to keep a client into Rule 11 proceedings? So we now have Your Honor, who was concerned about the Rule 11 and didn't necessarily think it was appropriate. We have said that Dr. McGady has now said that Commissioner Mortarosian, who was willing to stipulate to her competency, all of these people who are saying we believe she's competent, we should just, you should withdraw Rule 11, withdraw previous counsel's Rule 11, allow Ms. Vallow to be pro per. If at some point you or the state see something that is concerning, we can certainly put her in Rule 11 again. Competency is fluid. Again, we've never seen the state fight to keep someone in competency proceedings. It's usually the complete opposite. That's all I have.
Okay. Well, there's is a big distinction from the LeCount case in this defendant's case, because according to prior counsel's motion for Rule 11, she was previously found incompetent in another jurisdiction and put into some sort of restoration process.
And then found competent and tried.
Correct.
All we're saying is that where we're at right now, you asked us to come back and give you some evidence of competency. I think we have more than provided that at this point. And at this point, we're just delaying any speedy trial rights, any fundamental right to represent herself.
All right. Well, if
it's your turn.
If she were allowed to represent herself prior to that, I'd have to go through a colloquy with her and get some information. And based on that information, could still refer her for a Rule 11, depending on her answers to those questions.
Sure, and that was supposed to be my last point, was we haven't even done that colloquy with her. So let's do that and see where we end up.
All right. Well, ma'am, I am going to ask you a series of questions, and that could inform what happens next. Sure. Have you previously in any other criminal proceeding been referred for a competency determination?
Just say yes.
Yes, previously.
All right. And were you ever previously determined to be incompetent at any point?
Not to my understanding. So my understanding was that the judge did the same thing that you did, in abundance of caution. Let's go ahead and put her in and see. And I came out competent.
Well, when you say you came out competent, was there a period of time where you were ruled as incompetent?
I would say technically they did do that. That's how they put you into the program in that state. Correct.
How long were you in that program?
I was in that program for about 10 months.
Okay. And what types of things did you, what kind, did they give you classes? What types of things did they speak to you about where you went through some process where you were later deemed competent?
I did go through a process of several things, several classes, competency class, and meeting with doctors and evaluators, many, many evaluators.
Are you aware of any diagnosis that you were given?
Yes.
And what is that?
We're going to jump to the subject to that, especially with this being public and not sealed.
It's not relevant to this determination.
Okay, well then.
This was almost two years ago.
Then I'm going to keep her in the Rule 11 process to determine that. And
approach and discuss with you without it being on the without public on the record, but not public.
You mean as far as the diagnosis?
Yes.
Sure.
Which isn't it just delusional and a personality disorder, or yeah, are we referring? I'll skip ahead.
You can stop it.
Oh, you want to stop it? Okay.
So there's a moment there that's just mind-boggling to me. There's a moment there that just fascinates me, and that is the judge says essentially, okay, let's, you know, basically the judge says, the attorney says, my client's competent, she can represent herself, and the judge says, well, you know, your client's unusual because your client was deemed incompetent before and unable to stand trial for 10 months. And that's a concern. Right. So, and then he says, but you know, let me talk to your client so we can resolve this. He starts by asking, have you had a previous competency eval? And she says, yes. And then he asks her essentially, were you declared to be incompetent previously? And this is what she says. So this, I just can't get past this moment. Here's what she says. Not to my understanding. She says, not to my understanding. So essentially what she tells the judge is, I was never declared incompetent. I was never deemed incompetent, which obviously she was.
Right.
Right? Like, this is someone, Lori Vallow-Day, well, this is someone who, in response to the judge asking if she's ever been declared incompetent, says, not to my understanding. I mean, I guess she doesn't say no, but for all intents and purposes, she does deny it, right?
She denies it. Yeah.
And the question you have to ask, so the question, and for me, knowing this case really well, the question for me is, okay, like, she thinks she's perfectly normal.
Straight right? from like, her mouth. Yes.
she thinks she's never been incompetent. Like, she thinks this is all just an exercise in, I don't know, like, frivolity, right? Like, the court, like, all these people declared her incompetent in Idaho, and she just played this little game, knowing that she was perfectly fine. And here she is in Arizona, even though she's convicted of murder, here she is in Arizona going through the same song and dance, right? And the judge just, it's a factual question. Were you declared incompetent? Yes. The answer is yes. And she says, not to my understanding.
Like, right.
Like, okay.
She's not incompetent.
Not to my understanding. Becky said. So when I heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, like this is going to be a circus, right? Like, she's going to represent herself, and you know, she maybe part of the strategy here is that she represents herself, and it becomes such a fiasco that there's a mistrial, or maybe on appeal it gets overturned and they have to try it again. I don't know, but I don't think she's that good at strategy. I think she's pretty impulsive and pretty focused on the present. I don't really see Lori Vallodabal as a good planner. So I don't think this is strategy.
No,
I don't think this is strategy. I think, you know, the big question I have is somebody who can't answer that question about competency straight in a straightforward manner and acknowledge that she was the question. And someone who's been diagnosed with delusional disorder. The question I have is, can she even see what's going on here? Like, can a human being, this is a broad question, this is a broader question. Can a human being, if someone's delusional, can they see that they're delusional? Right? That's the problem here. This is the problem the court is going to have to grapple with. You have someone who was previously incompetent, who's diagnosed with delusional disorder, which, by the way, doesn't seem to have gone away. And she wants to represent herself. So if somebody is delusional and they're representing themselves in a murder trial and they can't see that they're delusional, can they represent themselves fairly and accurately? And so her attorney basically said there's two prongs to pro se or pro per. She calls it pro per, which is self-representation. There's two prongs to that. Number one is you have to understand the dispute. In other words, so part of competency is you have to know the charges against you, and you have to understand the repercussions of those charges. So if someone is charged with murder, you have to understand what that means, and you have to understand that if you're convicted of murdering someone, you're going to spend a lot of time in prison probably. So right. The first thing is you have to understand what her attorney calls the dispute. The dispute is that she murdered Charles Vallow. And then the second part of that is you have to formulate a defense. You have to have the capacity, the mental capacity to formulate a defense in this case, because she's representing herself. In a normal competency evaluation, which is something I might do, the second part of that is that you have to be able to aid or assist in your defense. So in other words, most clients aren't crazy enough to represent themselves in murder trials. So in that case, they have to have the capacity to assist their attorneys. So that's how normal competency works. But if someone is so delusional that they can't even acknowledge, or they're in such denial that they can't even acknowledge that they were incompetent for 10 months and they went through a whole process of medication and what, you know, if they can't admit that, can they represent themselves in court, right? Like, that's a hell of a tough question for a court to answer. I can't remember a case ever quite like this in terms of having a convicted murderer then come back in another murder charge and try to represent themselves when they have all these diagnoses of personality disorder, which I don't know what those were exactly. I could speculate, but let's say histrionic may be one of those. I don't know. Speculation, maybe borderline, narcissism, whatever. It's probably a cluster B, but
psychopathy. I said
Yeah, that's technically not a diagnosis, but yeah.
And not a personality disorder, right?
You know, so part of the issue here is that if you can't even see or acknowledge that you were incompetent previously and you deny that fact, then you really lack this capacity for reflection. So psychologists sometimes call this metacognition or mentalization. It's this capacity that human beings develop, usually as children at some point, and usually kids that are securely attached do better with this than kids that are not securely attached. So in other words, a child that has a secure, stable, loving relationship with a parent is more likely to explore the world and to feel safe doing that. And therefore, they're more likely to develop this capacity to reflect on the world rather than to just to hide from the world. Because kids that aren't securely attached, they feel a lot of fear and they're more in survival mode. So I'm really simplifying that issue, but essentially that's what it comes down to. So what you see here, I think, has to do in part with attachment issues.
Okay.
And this inability to really, this lack of metacognition or this lack of self-reflection, this inability to, for something as simple as, were you incompetent? She can't acknowledge that. Right?
She can't.
She would have, if she wants to represent herself, she would have been better off saying, yeah, I was declared incompetent, but then I resolved it and I stood trial and I understood everything, the charges. What I mean, right?
That would be the best thing to say.
Right. But what she's saying is, no, you know, I don't think so. I don't think.
Not to my understanding. They just put me through a program.
Not to my understanding. Right. So
it's just what they had to do as some program.
So it raises real questions. I mean, technically she could be competent in the sense that she understands where she is. She knows what a courtroom is. She knows what the proceedings entail. She's been through this. She could be competent in the sense that she understands the charges and the consequences, right? Like, she gets all that. I mean, these are the things that forensic people look at. And I guess technically she could, you know, she could assist her defense if she had an attorney. I guess technically she could formulate a defense, but it probably wouldn't be a very good formulation, right? It's probably, when I think about this, you know, when you think about the case in Arizona, if let's just say for the sake of argument, Alex Cox was alive and he was being tried, he would argue it's self-defense. Right. And so what Lori has to argue, I would assume, I don't think she can argue self-defense. I mean, she was in the room. She's in the room when Charles gets murdered. But I don't think she felt threatened necessarily. I mean, and she didn't pull the trigger. So she's going to be a co-conspirator.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she's going to have to argue. I think she's going to have to argue. The issue is whether that event, whether that murder of Charles Vallow was premeditated and planned. And the state has a lot of evidence showing emails and texts, right? The state has a lot of evidence showing that Lori was the one who talked to Alex Cox about coming over that morning to see Charles with a plan. I mean, I don't know how detailed the evidence they have is, but it appears fairly clear that this wasn't just some impulsive act of self-defense, that Lori knew that Alex was coming over for a purpose. Right. And so, but her defense, I would imagine her defense has to be that she didn't know. She knew nothing about it, even though Alex Cox never came over to visit Charles under these circumstances. Her defense, I presume, is going to have to be that it was a impulsive act. It wasn't planned and she knew nothing about it. She was just an innocent bystander, even though all her behavior before and after contradicts that.
Right.
And so
all of it.
Yeah. All of it.
Right. You say
all of it.
You mean all.
Right. And as long as we're talking about this, like, I mean, Chad Daybell, by the way, was involved in some of this. There were emails and some correspondence between Chad and Lori prior to all of this. And so Chad's not being charged here, I presume, because they don't have enough evidence. But I think it's worth mentioning that Chad Daybell, also a convicted murderer, was corresponding with Lori about some of the events that were going to transpire. I mean, that, you know, again, that the state felt like they didn't have enough evidence, but that's not to say that Chad wasn't potentially or hypothetically involved in some of the planning of this particular event or this particular murder. And so, but what I'm saying, so technically, I guess if you look at the letter of the law and if you look at what forensic people do, I guess you could say that she's competent at some level. But then if you step back, you have to wonder, like, this is someone who in many ways, she's in denial. She's got delusional disorder, right? Is she capable of representing herself in a way? I mean, you know, representing herself in a way that would be even remotely reasonable or competent, right? And not only that, as the in the clip you played, the attorney said, you know, I'm a defense attorney. We tell our clients, shut up. We tell our clients, don't talk. And here you have a scenario. Here you have a scenario where, right, where the alleged murderer is not only representing herself, but she's going to be talking a whole bunch and they're going to put her on the stand.
Right.
Right. I mean, I don't, it's just such an unusual situation. I mean,
when you thought this case might be slowing down,
right? When you thought Daybell was over, nope. Here we go yeah. Again. Get on the Daybell merry-go-round, because this is I don't even know. This is crazy making going on in Arizona.
Far from over. Yeah. Thank you for explaining that. You know, we're getting a lot of questions. Could I ask you a few questions? And thank you to those who have supported us. I appreciate it so much. Yes, justice for Charles. Nothing beats giving someone a gift they not only love, but something they wouldn't splurge on themselves. And that is where Quince comes in. Quality, timeless, and all at an affordable price. Quince is the place to get luxury pieces for 50 to 80% less than items from similar brands. For example, the coziest Mongolian cashmere sweaters start at just $50 compared to those typically priced over $100. I have one, and I took it with me to Delphi this fall. It was the warmest sweater for cold weather, yet I looked put together for the courtroom. Truly the perfect holiday gift. And you might be wondering how they offer these incredible prices. Well, Quince partners with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the savings on to you. And they only work with factories that use safe, ethical manufacturing practices. Gift luxury this holiday season without the luxury price tag. Go to quince.com/hiddentruecrime for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order. That's Quince, quince.com/hiddentruecrime to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/hiddentruecrime. These days, things impacting my hormones feels like an endless list. And after talking to friends, I know that I'm not alone. It is so frustrating to figure out how to feel like myself again. And sometimes just when we think we're on top of it, perimenopause or menopause hits and it's like starting all over again. But Hormone Harmony is a formula I've been taking daily. It contains herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, the beauty about adaptogens, they help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout our lives. Symptoms such as night sweats, poor sleep, racing thoughts, low mood. In the 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, there's a repetitive thing women keep saying. They feel like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HiddenTrueCrime at checkout. That's happymammoth.com. Use code HiddenTrueCrime for 15% off today. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. If you haven't finished shopping, or if you're like me and maybe you haven't even started, do not stress. I have the perfect solution. Uncommon Goods is the best place to find unique gifts. Whether you have an aunt who loves to try new recipes, a husband who loves the NFL, or a child who loves science projects, Uncommon Goods has you covered. Uncommon Goods looks for high quality, often handmade products from artists and small businesses, and they donate $1 from every purchase to a nonprofit of your choice, donating over $3 million to date. Get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/hiddentruecrime. That's uncommongoods.com/hiddentruecrime for 15% off. Do not miss out on this limited time offer. uncommon goods were all out of the ordinary. Thank you, Colby. Thank you, Deb, for sharing our playlist. That's one question from Jessica. I'm going to share a few and you can decide what. Brooke asks, do you believe she's telling herself that Jesus wants her to do this, that this is part of her purpose? I do. What do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Wow. Based on the previous trials, I think you'd have to say that she does, right. She talks, she communicates with Jesus, and Jesus has given her a plan and a mission. So, yeah, I guess you probably would have to see that as an element here. But when you put aside the religious aspect, I think underneath it all, and I appreciate the fact, by the way, that Colby agreed with me on my attention-seeking element. When you put everything else aside, I think she's just starving for attention. I think she's starving for the limelight. And this is, to me, this is a type of acting out. She's acting out.
Yeah.
She said, I'm not, you thought I was gone. I'm not going away. I'm coming back. Here I am. You know, I'm in your face and I'm going to be everyone's favorite mother to hate again.
Again. Yeah. What I mean, I don't know if you can even answer this because it's speculation, but yeah. What do you think she considers incompetent, or is that even just hard to speculate on?
Yeah. What does she consider incompetent? Apparently not what she went through in Idaho, I guess. whatever it is she went through in Idaho, she doesn't think that has anything to do with competency. So, and what she went through in Idaho seemed to be pretty elaborate, and there seemed to be a lot of people evaluating her. So, you know, it raises another question and raises a big question about whose perception should be considered more accurate, the courts? The courts are going to bring on, you know, so in Arizona, like most states, you have to get a Rule 11 of competency, you have to have evaluations by professionals. You know, usually that would be forensic evaluators. And they would make that determination. So the question here, one of the questions is, should the court make that determination, or should Lori make that determination? And yeah, I don't know. Like, the way we normally evaluate competency, this really raises some questions about whether the typical competency evaluation would be sufficient in this type of scenario.
Yeah.
Because you have so many other big issues here, in particular delusional disorder. Like, how does that affect? I mean, part of her, from what I understand, from what our sources have told us, part of her designation as being incompetent in the past had to do with delusional disorder, or at least partly with that.
Okay, well, I love what Aurora said. Have you been convicted of murder? Not to my understanding. Exactly, like what? Not to our understanding. And you know, in her interview with Colby Ryan, I'll get closer to my mic, forgive me. In her interview with Colby Ryan, her son, you can see that whole interview on Colby Ryan's channel. She states, and you point this out in your assessment of the interview, that she says, in my mind, this is how it happened. Right. In her understanding, you know, so the question is, what does she mean by her understanding? What is she saying there? In my mind, in my understanding, does she know the truth and she's twisting it, or what's going on?
Right. Is it? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't. Right. That's the big question.
I've stumped Dr. John. That's the big question.
Is she Is it a manipulation? Is she, you know, playing games with semantics and language?
Right.
Right. Or does she know? And
right.
And she, right. Does she know the truth? I mean,
because if she had really believed that she had not been deemed incompetent, she would have simply said, no, you know, not to my understanding or in my mind, there's some language there that.
But I think if I had, I think she tends to live a lot in fantasy.
Right.
And so
as
in that,
LA
in that,
states. Yeah.
Right. In that sense, I think her fantasy world is more important to her than reality. So there might be a part of her that understands what happened, but she's simply not willing to acknowledge it.
Yeah. People asked, right. Mary asked, do crazy people know they're crazy? If you're 100% delusional, is it true to you? As these are all the questions we're asking.
Yeah. I mean, right. And that's what's so fascinating about this trial is that these issues are now coming up. Like I just thought she would get an attorney. They'd try the case, right? But no, we're back on the crazy train. Like, no, I mean, for the most part, a crazy person does not know they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've lost usually like kind of the those touchstones and markers of reality, they've lost those.
Okay.
Those things that keep normal people grounded, usually they're unmoored from those markers of reality.
Right. And as Slam RN brings up, even if you have a fixed false belief that isn't necessarily true, you know, right, fixed false belief, that's still not always being crazy, you know.
Right. We're going to get into all the issues that we talked about for years with Daybell. But yeah, I mean, that's true. A false belief. Yeah. I mean, plenty of people have false beliefs. But they can do business with the world. So it wouldn't necessarily mean that they have psychological symptoms or mental health issues. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Tawny asks, Dr. John, how on earth does anybody think or could say that she knows right from wrong and she thinks she's done nothing wrong all this time?
So let's dig deeper with this. Now you're starting to cross over into insanity stuff.
Mm.
Right. So in Arizona, in many states, one of the major tenets of the insanity plea is that someone at the time of the crime didn't know that they weren't able to distinguish right from wrong, and they didn't know that what they were doing was wrong. Right. Mm. So there's a fine line between a lot of these types. These issues all kind of bleed into one another, you know, which raises the question, right, that Idaho does not have an insanity plea. Arizona does. So should she get an attorney and go down that route? Should she argue that
her attorney's going to be herself? So she's going to say, I am not insane. And I know right from wrong, and I am right.
Which is precisely why she can't go down the path of insanity, because you can't represent yourself. I don't know. I've never seen this. I mean, is it possible to represent yourself and say that you're insane?
You're not insane. She's going to be like, not insane, not insane. As Sherry says, legally wrong, but she believes morally right. I think in many ways she does believe that she did do things that were against the law, but morally it's okay for her to do it. That's my opinion.
Yes. That's a really great insight. I agree.
Yeah. Duty Ron is here with us tonight. Thank you, Duty Ron, for being here. Our friend Duty Ron. I feel like Shallow Vala. Why have I never heard that nickname? That's crazy. I feel like Shallow Vala is playing the system to get more attention and out of prison time. She will continue to manipulate the system. Love to Lauren, Dr. John, and the Hidden Gems. And Duty Ron, we are glad that your cancer treatments are going well and that there is hope this holiday season. It's good to see you here.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. So happy.
Shallow Vala. Where have we been for 5 years?
I know. We haven't heard. Wow. I feel like I feel like we really missed the bus on that one. Like we should have been using that years ago.
Yeah.
So I agree with, Duty Ron that, a lot of this is just acting out. A lot of this is attention seeking. I don't think she knows how to walk away from the limelight. This is like her last hurrah.
Yeah. We've brought up Charles. Of course, Charles lost his life, but I do want to bring up Brandon. Brandon also deserves justice. He is lucky to be alive. Very lucky to be alive. And he has, very lucky to be alive. I can't say that enough. And so he also deserves justice, and he is very traumatized. Yes, on this attempt, and he needs justice. Thank you. We couldn't agree more. And Brandon took over along with Kay where Charles left off. You know, just really fighting for an investigation and to understand what was going on. Let's see what else I have here. Rosie asks, why is she mounting a defense in Arizona when she didn't in Idaho? I think she did in Idaho. I just think that her attorneys took the reins a little bit more, in my opinion.
It wasn't the most coherent defense. I think it was a defense. Part of the issue was in Idaho, I think that she was unwilling to throw Chad Daybell under the bus. Otherwise, she probably would have had a much stronger, coherent defense. But, I mean, her defense was very limited.
Yeah.
But now maybe in Arizona we'll get a tell-all version of her, you know, perception of events. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't involve the kids, obviously, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised for her to start talking about zombies at some point. I think the prosecution has to be afraid of the fact that you have someone who could, in her own defense, she could talk about possessions, right? Demonic possessions or zombies or, and I mean, if somebody started doing that, it would really throw into question the entire process, right? It would really raise questions about mistrial. And I don't know, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's part of her strategy. Is that maybe she wants to subvert this thing to such a degree that it gets thrown out or retried? I don't know. But it's really bizarre.
It is. Beth is saying, is it possible Lori fears punishment sentence in a mental institution if found incompetent? Is that her rational fear? I think I know what her rational fear is actually about being found incompetent, but what do you think?
Right. That's a good point. I mean, I don't know.
I've heard Maricopa County is pretty bad. I've heard that Arizona is a lot worse than Idaho, the prison. But
yeah, in the prison system in general, someone who's placed in a mental health facility, it tends to be nicer. It's not pleasant, but I mean, I don't know about Arizona specifically, but prisoners generally would prefer to be in mental institutions rather than in, you know, hardcore prisons. But so I don't know if that would be part of her fear. I think it's more about how she perceives herself.
Yes, I completely agree. I want to remind you of a story we have a story that not everybody saw play out in court, a behind the scenes story in her Idaho trial. Closing arguments. Many people wondered and were curious why her defense team had not yet brought up pointing the finger at Chad Daybell. And allegedly it was because she told them not to, that she did not want to blame Chad Daybell at all. And in the closing arguments, her attorney, Archibald, decided to say, Chad Daybell was calling the shots. Chad Daybell, this doomsday author. Chad Daybell manipulated this woman. Chad Daybell is a cult leader. All those things that we were all wondering and thinking. And Lori was visibly angry in court. Nobody could see this necessarily because there was only audio, but we were able to report how angry she was that this was being said. Well, behind the scenes, allegedly, Lori went back and shared with her defense team just how angry she was. And what she was angry about was someone walked in there and she said, "You made me look dumb. You made me look dumb." I find that fascinating. It wasn't, you put my husband down, or, you know, it was you. Now everybody out there thinks I'm stupid. What's that about? You know, it's about her, right? Like her perception of herself.
Right, exactly. It's about her self-image and how she wants to be seen by other people. It's about her ego, narcissism, vanity, same old stuff. Almost every criminal has some element of hubris or narcissism, vanity. I mean, it's a constant thread through almost, you know, every, maybe not all, but almost every criminal I've evaluated struggles to some degree with issues along those lines.
Yeah. Yes. That's a fascinating idea. Do you think she wants to represent herself as a way to try to have contact with Chad? Now we're really getting into some legal issues. Who knows? I know one thing she doesn't do is ever waive her right to a speedy trial. So, you know, who knows?
Well, I just had the thought, maybe she plans on calling Chad as a witness.
Right. I know.
she could call Chad as her star witness.
Right.
I mean, he would be like,
"Yep, not incompetent. She knew exactly what she was doing, guys. I am here to vouch for the woman I'm married to. Not incompetent. She's got this one." He would be great witness for that.
Master planner.
She's a master planner. She knows what she's doing. She knows right from wrong. Look at her. Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure Chad would be like, "Yes, pick right. me." He'd be a pick me boy right there. I'm like, "I'll be your witness, your star witness right here."
Right.
It was all her idea. This woman's a genius. A genius, I tell you.
Right. And they'll try to get his case overturned.
Yeah. Well, we need to wind down. We've been going for about an hour and we have to be done. But this was so good to finally talk about this. It's been on our minds. Justice for Charles is on our minds. Justice for Brandon. And this case that we have covered for years now. For those that don't know, John and I started our podcast with this case where we only talked about this case for a very, very long time, for years, and we will see it through. And we have become close friends with Woodcocks and with Colby and with so many of the surviving victims. And we, our hearts are in this case. Somebody wrote earlier, by the way, I actually started, they said, "Lauren, don't you think you get too close to these cases? And don't you think you're a little emotional over this?" And yeah, actually, I did get more close to this case than any case I ever have. And for that, I'm grateful. I was able to maybe leave my television reporting career for a little bit so I could delve deeply into a case in a way I never have before, which has become a human interest case for me and one where I care dearly and passionately for the surviving victims. And I will see it through and I care. So, yeah. And we will be there at the trial in Arizona, hanging out with Justin Lum and Nate. Can't wait to see my buddy Justin. Yeah. He wasn't able to come to the last trial. So anything else you want to say?
I assume Justin's been covering all the hearings.
He has. He is the reason Justin testified in court. Justin Lum with local Fox affiliate in Phoenix, Arizona, an excellent investigative reporter. He argued in court for cameras in the courtroom, and he is the reason we are sitting back and watching cameras in the courtroom once again. So, yes, he has been following it closely, and we rely on him. Anything else, babe, before we head out?
Just want to say it's great to connect with our gems again, and I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving and holidays upcoming. Hope everyone is getting prepared for the holidays. I know we're trying to, but it's been slow. But anyway, thanks to everyone for being here, and happy belated Thanksgiving.
Thank you to those who like and subscribe. It means so much. It's the greatest support you can give us. It's free. It means so much to those of you that become YouTube members or Patreon members at patreon.com/intocrime. We also appreciate you there so much, and it's a great way to support us. We are so glad to be home together this holiday season, and we'll be catching up on all of the cases that we set aside while I was in Delphi, Indiana, this being the first. And we know that there are so many James Craig, Madeline Soto, and the Bridegain case, as well as many more. So bit by bit, we will be catching up on all the recent updates. So make sure to hit subscribe and notifications so you can be with us as we delve again into unthinkable crimes and the psychological motivations behind them. Thank you, everyone. And as you just said, have a blessed night. And thank you to our moderators. We'll see you.
Good night.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.